This is a special edition of the My Mac Magazine podcast. My Mac Magazine goes to TechSmith.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com podcast.
Hey everyone, Tim Robertson with the MyMac Podcast. This is kind of a special podcast. This isn't MyMac Podcast number 197. We're still going to be recording that Thursday night, so the day you guys listen to this, we're going to be recording another podcast with Guy Searle and David Cohen and Lee Gibbons from America Online will be on with us again. And maybe a special guest, or maybe not. We'll find out how that goes. But this is a special edition of the podcast. This is something that I would love to be able to do much more often, but I live in Michigan. Now, Michigan is not the high-tech capital of the world. That would be the Bay City area in California, San Francisco, Silicon Valley. If I live there, this is the kind of show that I would be doing often. I would be going to a company's headquarters. I would be sitting down with different people in the company, talking to them, learning about the product, learning about the people behind the company, which to me is the most interesting thing about any interview that I do. It's nice to learn about the product. I know that's what a lot of you guys are listening for, but longtime listeners of the podcast know that I like to meet the people behind the company. I like to put a human face with these companies. So when you go out and buy this program, you kind of know a little bit more about the company than the average buyer. You know the people behind the company, and I think that kind of gives you, the listener and the buyer of these programs, a comfort level that you just don't get usually. So we kind of get the human element of these companies on the podcast. So this week, I went to a company called TechSmith. They're actually in Oskamo, right here in the Michigan area, about just a little bit less than 1 hour's drive from my house, so practically my backyard. I was really looking forward to this. Like I said, because I don't usually get to do this, and it was, let me back up and say, first of all, TechSmith is a first-class company. I was so impressed with them. Now, I like a lot of the people that I meet on the podcast, a lot of the people that I've interviewed over the years, and, you know, you could just go up to the MyMac website and look at some of our archived podcasts, and we've done some just fantastic interviews, not just, you know, via Skype on the show on a weekly basis, but stuff that we've done from the Macworld Expo showroom floor. John Nemirovsky has done stuff with people right in Apple Store. So we have a lot of experience of doing podcasting interviews, but this was different. This was sitting down basically with various people at TechSmith talking about different products, getting different perspectives. It was a lot of fun. Now, TechSmith, like I said, a first-class organization. I got to say, I really, really enjoyed my visit there. Really great people. If you have a need for some of the products that you're going to be hearing about later in the podcast, you can rest assured that the people behind these products really do care. Now, you hear about people giving lip service to customer service. This is one of the rare times that when they were talking about customer service and listening to the customer, I really got the impression they really, really meant it. And it was very refreshing. Some of the products that we're going to be talking about, Camtasia Studio, Snagit, UserView, and they actually own Screencast.com. So go up to Screencast.com and take a look. I think you might find that very interesting. And also check out TechSmith.com. It's spelled exactly the way you think, TechSmith.com, TechSmith. TechSmith's been in business. They just celebrated their 20th year. And as a software developer, that's a long time. When you figure how many software developers have come and gone, and really some really good companies are no longer with us, they're gone nowadays. TechSmith is still here, and it looks to me they're more popular than ever. This is a company in a down economy that's actually looking to hire people. And I wanted to give this a special message at the beginning of the podcast because it was overlooked during all the interviews that we were having that TechSmith is looking for Mac developers. If you're a Macintosh developer and you're looking for a job, preferably if you're here in the Michigan area, TechSmith is definitely hiring. So go up to TechSmith.com, Click the company link and then go down to career opportunities, and you're going to find some open positions that it may be perfect for you. And hey, if you live in the Bay Area but you're not really tied there, you don't have a family or anything like that, and you're sick of the high rent and the high cost of living in the Bay Area, and you don't mind a little snow, Michigan is a great place to live. It really is. So if you're, maybe even if you're looking to move, this might be a perfect opportunity for you as a developer. You can work for a company that I can vouch for. And I don't say that lightly. This is a company that I would like to work for. It's a really, really fantastic company. The people there are just simply great. Before we jump into the rest of the show, I do want to send out a few thanks to a couple of the people at TechSmith that really made this possible, allowed me to come and interrupt their busy schedule and do this podcast on site at the TechSmith headquarters in Oskamo, Michigan. First of all, Amy Hagerstrom, she is the global PR manager. It was with Amy that I pretty much set all of this up. She was the one that I talked to initially. She's the one that made the schedule, who I was going to be speaking to and when. She was very accommodating. Thank you very much, Amy. I actually pulled Amy I kind of surprised her towards the end of the podcast. I brought her into the interview because I know she wasn't planning on it, but Amy, if I'm sitting there and I'm doing an interview and you're in the same room, I'm going to get you on the show. That's just the way it is. I even did the same thing to a local news, CBS News affiliate a few years ago when they came out and did a story in our podcast. They interviewed me and my co-host at the time for their news program, and then they kind of filmed us actually recording our podcast, and I brought the news reporter onto the show. She wasn't expecting it, so fair warning to anybody else out there, whoever does a live podcast interview with me, if you're there, I'm going to bring you on the show. And Amy did great. She's actually new in the company. She's new at TechSmith. But you'll hear all about that in a little bit. I also wanted to thank Dave McCollum. I talked to Dave on the phone and set some of this up with him. And he actually met me at the door when I got to TechSmith. Now, the TechSmith campus, they're in this pretty big office complex. And they actually have a couple of different buildings. So, of course, when I pulled in, I was completely lost. And it was Dave that saved me. He came and found me and steered me in the right direction. So thank you very much, Dave McCollum. And lastly, Bill Hamilton. Bill is one of the founders and the president of TechSmith. I wasn't expecting to get Bill on the show. And I was really glad that he consented to do so. It's my favorite part of this entire interview that you guys are going to hear, this entire podcast. It's second to the last segment. Bill has a very rich history when it comes to computers. Of course, they just celebrated their 20th anniversary at TechSmith, so he's been in the software business for a long time, and he's come a long way. And it was really, really interesting to talk to Bill. So on a personal level, thank you very much, Bill. I really do appreciate it. So let's jump over to the TechSmith podcast. This is a special edition, MyMac.com. We're sitting down with Dave McCollum. What's your position here, Dave?
I'm the education evangelist at TechSmith.
What does that mean?
And basically that means that I work with all of our customers that are in education, both K through 12 and higher ed, and just kind of do whatever they need. A lot of it is making connections. You'll meet some of the product managers later on. So it's gathering feedback, making sure that what the customers are looking for ends up in the products. So
you're kind of a go-between between the people that make the product and the people who use the product.
Definitely.
It takes a lot of time. I got to imagine you're on the road a lot.
Yep, I go to quite a few educational technology shows. This is kind of a rare stretch for me where I'm in the office for about 40 straight days, so it's kind of nice. But yeah, I've been on the road quite a bit. And then we also spend a lot of time online through various social media, tracking what people are saying on blogs, on sites like Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And just finding, there are new things are popping up every day, so finding new ways to interact with our customers.
Do you think that the internet has helped or hindered how you guys produce products here?
Oh, it's helped, or maybe I'd probably even say made it possible.
Yeah.
I mean, as we move forward with our products, you'll learn about Jing from Tony later on, and that's, the internet is absolutely required for that. delivery of Camtasia Studio videos. You know, the internet is definitely the most popular way to do that. And I think that, and a little bit more about what I was saying, you know, regarding customers, it's provided so many new opportunities for us to interact with them. Betsy Weber, our chief evangelist, has a blog, and it's great to be able to post just kind of what's going on here and keep everyone else up to date what we're doing. Lots of comments on there, so I think it's, you know, without the internet, I don't know where we would be right now.
How'd you land this job? And this is not something that you would necessarily see advertised in the newspaper. We want an evangelist, and that's kind of what you are. How do you come into a position like this?
Well, I actually started out, I went to Michigan State, just down the road. Okemos is right outside of East Lansing. And while I was at Michigan State, I worked as a student network assistant, and then immediately after I graduated, I worked as a network administrator. And I started using Camtasia Studio to create tutorial videos for my staff.
Did you know the company was just right down the road when you started using it?
I actually learned from a friend that told me about Camtasia Studio, and you know, I just met him at a graduation party, and he told me about TechSmith and the software and gave me a business card, so I went and looked it up and started using Camtasia and thought, you know, wow, this is great, because there were, as an IT administrator, there are so many things that you have to say over and over again. People
right.
always ask, how do I set up my Outlook? How do I do all this stuff? So I started making videos for all those things with Camtasia and putting them online. So
how many years ago was that? A couple years ago?
That was, let's see, up in from 2003 until April 2006.
So instead of calling you, you just have people, go watch that video.
Yep, exactly.
Don't bother me. Go watch the video. If you still have questions, then call me.
Absolutely.
Smart.
So from there, so once I started using the software, I really started to like it, and then I met a couple other people from the company and found out that they had an IT position posted, so I applied for that and was hired. That was April 2006, and I worked in the IT department here for about a year, and I was actually helping Betsy, our chief evangelist, doing something on her computer, and she said, hey, we have this position posted for someone in education, and she thought I'd be good for it since I had the educational
sure.
background, and I didn't really know anything about it going in, and I just saw it and thought it sounded really exciting, and I'm really glad I did it.
Sounds like a lot of the stuff that you're doing, you're kind of making it up as you go, as the technologies are changing online, social media, Web 2.0, as it's changing, you have to kind of change your job to match what's going on out there to promote the company, to promote the products, but also to find out what people are saying. How difficult is it to stay on top of what's new out there, or is it just kind of so gradual that you just take it for granted?
It's, I think, a little bit of both. On one hand, it's difficult, but we have quite a few people. It's not just Betsy and I that are tracking these things. You know, like Tony or Troy, the product managers, will find something. We also have a third evangelist on our team, Nina Gardner, who is our evangelist activities coordinator. And she does a lot of the monitoring of social media, and she finds a lot of great tools that make it easier to, you know, track, you know, 10 blog search engines all at once. So So I think if it was just one person, it would be difficult, but I think we have
a big team.
Yeah, and I think that our communication is really good. So I think it's really just a lot of fun, because it means that, you know, we're not doing the same thing every day. We're always finding new and exciting stuff.
You would think that software development usually takes place in the Bay Area. In fact, that's where most of it does happen. It's pretty rare to find a company like TechSmith in the middle of Michigan, which it surprised me when someone pointed your products out to me and I started looking into it, thinking about, oh, we should get them on the podcast. This is pretty cool. And I've had people tell me that your products were great. You should get them on the podcast. I started looking at it. I saw where you guys were on the map, and I was like, wow, they're right in my backyard. How rare is it for you to see a company like TechSmith? Obviously, you work here, but to be here in Michigan and growing as a company rather than... Everybody listening to this knows all the problems with the car companies in this area, Ford, GM, Chrysler. They're going smaller. They're laying people off. Here's a tech company right here in the middle of Michigan. You guys are actually growing. How rare is it for you to see a company like TechSmith in Michigan?
Yeah, I think it is pretty rare. I mean, there are some other companies. Liquid Web over in Lansing is a great and very fast or very quickly growing company. But I was incredibly surprised when I found out it was here and applied for the job. I never envisioned having a job like this anywhere but somewhere in California.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's really great. I mean, there are some advantages to being here. and that there are so many great schools in Michigan. I mean, we have tons of people from all over, obviously Michigan and Michigan State, but
right here in the backyard.
Yeah, so, and there aren't a whole lot of other tech jobs available, so we have a great pool of candidates. And I should mention now that we do have, I think I looked on the website yesterday and we had 19 positions open.
It's amazing. In this economy, I mean, it's everybody else is laying off or simply not hiring. You guys are growing.
Yeah. I think one reason for that too is that we're really, the Michigan economy doesn't affect us all that much because we're, you know, a lot of our sales, a huge majority of our sales are online and people mm-hmm. all over the country and all over the world are buying it. So really our location is just, you know, the only issue is being able to find people, and we've been able to do a pretty good job of that. But
cost of living here in this area of Michigan is going to be a lot lower than, say, the Bay Area. So you can get very high-quality people, you can pay them well, and they're going to keep a lot more of their money rather than spending $1.5 million on a house, which would be a very small house here in Michigan if you got it in San Francisco. Here, they can get a much better house for a lot less money. Their cost of living is going to be lower. They're still going to make good money, so really they're going to do better here than they would, say, in the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely.
So how many products now does TechSmith have that you guys are actively selling on the Internet?
Let's see. We have Snagit, which is – I'll go over these briefly, but you'll be talking to the product managers.
Sure.
So they'll be the experts and give you the rundown. We have Snagit, which is kind of our original product. Bill will give you the company history. We started out doing some consulting, but then Snagit became an internal product, which eventually became our first real customer product. And that's for screen capture and editing. Tony will give you the rundown on that. Camtasia Studio kind of grew out of a small video capture component of Snagit, and Troy will give you the rundown there. Those are the two main products right now. They're kind of our staples, I guess I'd say. And Camtasia Relay is in beta right now. That grew out of Camtasia Studio, and that is for lecture capture. And then we have Screencast.com, which is, I guess I would say it's a product. It's a little bit different because it's a hosting service.
It's a great and domain name. I mean, it's really, really good.
Yeah, you guys, definitely.
Did you have to buy that domain name from somebody, or did you get luck out and it was still available?
I think we got it pretty early on. I'm not sure. I think Tony would probably know that.
That's a great domain. It's hard to find those.
Yeah, definitely. And then we have Moray and UserView. So I think this is going to put us at six products here. Moray and UserView are for usability testing. So if you had a software application or website, and you wanted to see how your users were interacting with it. Moray and UserView use some of the similar technologies to record what's going on the screen, record audio, record webcam, so you can capture that user experience and use that. And there are also some metrics and data that are processed in the background, and you can use all that information to find out what you need to do to improve your website or software application. And then we also have Jing, which is
The new one.
Yep, that's the new one, and also that'll be a big one here because that's our first cross-platform effort.
Macintosh.
So, yep. So I'll save Jing for Tony because that's his baby. So,
okay.
So I guess I'd say it's seven products right now.
Dave McCollum is the education evangelist here at TechSmith. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thanks, Tim.
Still sitting here at TechSmith, we're talking with Tony Dunkel. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Tim.
You just told me you were at the New Media Expo last week.
I was.
I wasn't there. I so wanted to be. A lot of people that I know were there. They were asking, why weren't you there? I just couldn't make it, but you were at the New Media Expo. What'd you think?
You know, it's the second year that I've been there, and it was really just a tremendous...
It's growing.
...showing. It is. And, you know, they moved it to Las Vegas this year from Orange County. It seemed to have a good following there as well, so...
Yeah. You think it's good to move to Las Vegas, or do you think...
Las Vegas is a typical convention spot, but yeah. Anytime you can get outside of there, I think it adds a unique element. You get people from those local communities that come out, so it's nice to see it spread around, too.
So what are you promoting there at the New Media Expo?
Well, TechSmith as a whole, really.
Really?
So we have obviously the products that live in the whole visual communication space. And folks that live in the podcasting, the traditional podcasting space, are evolving. And you're seeing these enhanced podcasts come out. And vodcasts, as they're often also known as. And so we're seeing that evolution.
As well.
Yep, so, absolutely. So as we see that, people are expanding. This time, uniquely, there was a lot of folks there that were just getting their feet wet. Into the whole industry. And so we spoke with folks that really didn't know a lot about anything in the space and were there just trying to understand.
When you think about this, I started podcasting in 2004, and that's when the term podcasting really came into vogue.
Right.
There was people that were doing stuff online before that, but sure. It was really 2004 when Adam Curry and I forgot his name now, the other gentleman who came up with RSS, doesn't matter, kind of came up with this whole idea of subscribing to content that you can download to your computer automatically. It automatically syncs to your iPod. That was kind of the holy crap moment. Podcasting kind of exploded at that point. For a company like TechSmith, you guys have been around a lot longer than podcasting has. What has this video and audio, what's this done for you guys?
Well, you've seen the expansion, or we've seen the expansion in interest in our products just mm-hmm. skyrocket.
Absolutely.
We feel like we're now in the hot space. Not by chance. Of course, we sort of saw
vision. It takes time and effort to get to this point.
Right, right. But it's nice. It takes more than just us. It takes an entire industry. It takes other partner players in the space and the community at large to make that sort of grow. And so
your products are the type of products that's going to help an independent publisher like myself kind of start competing on a level playing field with the big boys, with the MTVs and the CBSs.
You got it.
The NBCs. We're producing content that people could literally, say video for instance, they could subscribe to, get it automatically delivered to them via iTunes and their Apple TV. They're watching in their living room, and really we're on the same footing at that point as a show like Lost. They're sitting there watching us. Hopefully they're seeing ads in our show so we get paid. Your products are definitely on the cutting edge. Why do you think you guys are so far ahead of your competition, it seems?
Well, I think obviously it's listening to customers. So when you listen to customers, you create the right features. And there's a blend of that and also watching what's happening out there in the marketplace. When you bring those two inputs back into a company that's passionate about visual communication, it makes it real easy to start bringing together all those pieces and making the right product.
So how long have you been with TechSmith?
6 years.
6 years, that's a long time. What did you start doing here when you first started?
Product management, actually.
So you're still doing the same thing?
Yeah, I actually came
in. So you're either not very good or you're so good they can't afford to move you out of your position.
Well, surprisingly, I came in when we were really small.
Really?
And so as we've grown, we've continued to expand the role and expand the company. So we're growing like mad right now. It's a great time to be part of TechSmith.
So what's Jing?
So, Jing's actually a surprising little story that came out of really the developer corner of TechSmith. We, a few years ago, had been working, obviously, with Snagit and Camtasia Studio, our premier products in the screen recording space and the screen capture space. And as we were using Jing, or as we were using those products, we're finding that the way we communicate, which is over instant message chats and chat rooms mm-hmm. about designing products and things like that, there was no easy way for us to get those screen captures of a bug or a great idea or something across to one another. We always had to email them. And so when you try to add a video element to that, it became impossible. I mean, trying to email a video, as you can imagine,
just
doesn't
work.
So he said, well, we can fix this problem, guys. I mean, we build these kind of products. Let's solve this, right? And so over time, we sort of nurtured this little Skunkworks project inside the company. And as it became used more and more, almost without even exposing it to the rest of the staff inside TechSmith, it just crept out. And more people were using it. And we said, if this is adopting like this inside TechSmith, maybe we should turn it live outside.
So it wasn't even designed to be sold. This is more for internal.
You got it. Absolutely.
I think some of the best products come out that way. People see a problem. They come up with a solution. Then all of a sudden they think, bing, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we offer this to other people?
Which is the way, right, real marketing should be done. You should find a problem, fill it, as opposed to having a technology and finding a problem.
Yes, exactly. That happens all too often, mm-hmm. I think. It's called Windows. we're a Mac podcast, so I can
of
say
course,
that here.
Understand.
So is Jing going to be cross-platform?
Jing is cross-platform and has been
already.
Since its inception. Yep.
Awesome. How long has it been out?
We launched July of 2007.
So this is really a baby product still.
It is, yeah. In fact, we ran it as a project for the first year. Still named the Jing Project, but last July, just a month ago here, we decided that we'd heard enough, we'd learned enough, and we made it official. It's now a free offering from TechSmith.
So it's not going to cost people a dime to get Jing?
Not to use Jing.
So what does it do exactly?
So the idea with Jing is that if you can take a screen capture and you can create a video, we want to make those two processes so absolutely dead simple that there's no learning curve. That anyone that's really living or using their computers online can now find a way to converse visually with one another, whether it's helping mom understand how to, you know, set up her email, or it's, you know, playing a cool video game and wanting to make a comment as you're playing the game and being able to send it off to a friend. We want that, you know, sort of consumer and work modes just to sort of meld together in terms of conversing about online content.
This could be really good for, like, for instance, one of our writers, Danny Yankolo, does and has wanted to do more of screen capture, talking over the video, showing people, new Mac users, how to do this, how to change an icon, how to pull something out of your dock. Do you think this product would work for him?
Absolutely. In fact, we were joking around at the Newbie Expo we were at about, we had several people coming up, and we kept using the story about helping your mom.
Yeah.
And someone said, well, these are like mom casts.
Well, there's a huge, more and more, I don't want to say old, but elderly people are starting to use computers, both PC and Mac, obviously. Right. We need a way to make them comfortable with the technology. Yeah. And, yeah, right now I'm kind of the tech guy in my family. Mm-hmm. You're probably the tech guy in your family. You get those calls.
Yeah.
I can't get my email to work. I can't do this. How do I do this? How do I do that? If there was a place out there that you could simply send your relatives to, or the older people that really don't know, or the brand new computers don't necessarily need to be older people, to watch video, I think people have a tendency to learn much quicker to see and to hear than just read in a book.
Absolutely. It's like sitting over someone's shoulder and watching them do it.
Yeah.
And they can do that from any part of the globe.
That's pretty great.
As a content author.
So any other products that you guys are wanting to talk about before we scoot you out of here?
Well, I'm sure you're going to be maybe talking with others about that. I also manage the Snagit product, which has been...
What is Snagit?
Snagit has been really the premier screen capture tool. And it doesn't only help you capture the screen, but then that's really creates the canvas of your message.
Right.
And so again, in the idea of visual communication, you then with Snagit can do all sorts of editing to enrich that screen capture to make your point crystal clear. So putting that screenshot into web marketing material, technical documentation, tech support emails, et cetera. It's sort of the cream of the crop of that space.
Tony Dunkel is the product manager of the Jing product in Snagit. Thanks, Tony.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Next up here at TechSmith is Dave Cheng. Hello, Dave.
Hi.
You're the Mac guy here, man.
Yeah, I'm a lead developer on Camtasia Studio for the Mac.
So developing for the Mac at a company that has a whole lot of Windows development, how difficult is it, or do you find it pretty easy?
It's been a little difficult. We've been such a Windows shop for a long time, and I was actually a Windows developer for a few years and made the transition over when I had nothing to do, started developing on a Mac, and just a lot of stuff, just the company email and just a lot of development culture, even on the Windows platform in general, is different than the Mac platform.
What do you guys use to program here? Are you using like Visual Basic? Are you using Objective-C, C++?
Right, well, on the Windows side, Visual Studio is kind of the standard.
Yep.
And on the Mac, everyone uses Xcode pretty
much.
So
you're doing it Xcode all the way?
Yep, we're using Xcode and, other tools, but that is our main dev environment.
So what's a big program that you're working on most of the time?
I am, since I'm lead developer on Camtasia Studio, that's what I'm working on. Working on the...
Any iPhone stuff in the future, or probably not? I don't know if this kind of software really translates well to the iPhone, because you can't really run background processes on the iPhone, so I don't know if you could really record anything, or... Has anyone really looked at the iPhone as a development platform yet here?
Yeah, we've explored it. I think it's kind of hard to ignore the whole iPhone thing.
Sure.
It's huge. So I mean, we've had a few people take a look at it, and even just some developers in the spare time just looking at it. I would love to look at it if I didn't have a one-year-old at home running around.
Yeah, but, that's kind of hard to do. Absolutely. Yeah. So why do you like programming on the Mac, or do you hate it and you'd much rather go back to the PC?
Oh, I absolutely love programming on the Mac. Yeah. I would never go back to programming on Windows. Sometimes I still have to go back and look at a few things, and it drives me nuts every time I got to fire up Parallels or fire up my Windows machine. But I love just the clean interfaces that Apple provides. It also helps probably that I've been to a few of the WWDC conferences.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun, and they really pour on the Apple's awesome because of this. This API is awesome because of this, and it's hard to not buy into it because they're
very persuasive. But that's their job too.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that developing on the Mac is easier nowadays, or did you ever develop on the Mac in the pre OS 10 days?
I did a little bit. I looked into a little bit when I was in high school,
yeah.
And I just didn't understand it all, maybe just because I was in high school.
You
too.
Were in high school, yeah. And there was this thing called girls out there that we were all trying to learn more about at the time, yeah.
Right.
That takes a lot of our mental effort.
Yeah, and programming and girls, you know.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't, you know, you can't really impress them. And you got to see how the way I compiled this. No, it doesn't really work.
Right.
My understanding, I'm not a programmer, obviously. If I was, I wouldn't be doing podcasts. I'd be making real money. my understanding, though, is Xcode is just fabulous to develop in. Every developer that I talk to says they just love it.
Sure, Xcode's pretty good. I more so like the actual APIs that Apple exposes, as opposed to the actual development environment in Xcode. I used Visual Studio for a few years, and there's actually a few things in there as bloated and as slow and yeah. whatever as it is. There's a few things in there that I miss, and I think Apple's still got some work to some ways to go with Xcode, and I know they're working on it too.
Yep. So. Before you got into development here at TechSmith, what did you do? Or did you come directly from college to this?
Yep, pretty much came
directly from college. This is pretty much your first, quote, real job.
Right, yep.
Did you go to school around here?
Yeah, I went to University of Michigan.
Awesome.
So,
you get a lot of, hey, I'm from state, I'm from University of Michigan.
Yeah, I try not to tell too many people that.
Is there more state people here?
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's probably about 80, 90%, it seems like.
So you're like the cool guy here, and everybody else is like, ugh, green, ugh.
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm a U of M person myself, so.
Okay.
I prefer U of M over the state, but everybody in my family seems to like state more. It's kind of one of those. Most of the people listening to this podcast don't really probably even understand that there are two colleges real close together here in Michigan, University of Michigan, U of M, that's the Wolverines, and then Michigan State, which is the Spartans. And geographically speaking, they're really close. And these are two big major colleges, which I think is kind of rare to have such big colleges close together. And TechSmith is kind of located in the area where you're right in the backyard of Michigan State, but you guys are also real close to the University of Michigan. I can jump in the car and be at U of M within 20 minutes probably from here. Well, maybe a half hour.
Yeah, 45 minutes.
So you guys got a really diverse group of students that you can kind of recruit from. Did they come to you, or did you find a job opening here at TechSmith that you applied for?
They came to U of M. We do career fairs at schools all over Michigan. I actually came back after and applied. And
were you surprised to find a company like TechSmith right in the backyard?
Yeah. I mean, I was looking for jobs for a while, and I was trying to stay in Michigan because my family was all around here. And real surprised, hey, this company's actually doing some cool software stuff in Michigan.
What the heck?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of what I said when I found TechSmith online and setting up the interview and stuff. I was like, they're right here in my backyard, because most of the interviews that I do are via Skype. Because all the developers are in California or somewhere else. They're not here in Michigan.
Right.
But when I found out you guys are just right here, I had to jump in my car and drive over, because it's too good of an opportunity to pass up to meet a company that's making great products right in my backyard. It's almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been here now?
I've been here for 5 years.
5 years?
Yep.
What do you like about TechSmith?
I love the work environment. I like how the company really cares about its employees, especially developers. I feel like we're kind of highly respected. We're not just kind of code monkeys that,
right.
you know, they come in and say, make this, and then we have no input. We have input at, you know,
so
almost every stage. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is nice. I mean, you think that a lot of companies would do that automatically, but that's not the case all the time.
Yep, yep.
So if you've been here for 5 years, that means you've seen the explosion of growth over the last 5 years. Are you surprised that the company seems to be getting this big and making this many products so soon?
I guess I don't really know.
No?
I've never worked for any other company. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, probably.
But
yeah.
It is neat that we've grown a lot. I mean, there's of course a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of pains that come with doubling in size, or you know, it's so quickly.
Yeah.
But I think we still have the small company feel and culture. So.
What was the first computer you ever used?
I used an Apple IIe when I was 3, and I played a game called Taxman.
Oh, of course,
yeah.
That's a classic.
Yeah, yeah. And my parents like to tell the story of how these was before I could talk. I could put in the disk, type in catalog,
really?
And then type in run, and I could. That's how much I was dedicated to playing video games.
Isn't it amazing to you that those games and those programs that you're using back then, you could literally load in a web browser and play online?
Yeah,
now.
That's incredible. I've heard about it. I wanted to do that, but there's all these classic Apple II games that I haven't gone back to.
It's not just Apple. It's, I mean, you can literally in a web browser boot up a TRS-80 and use it just like you would a real TRS-80 in the web browser.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more memory associated to that web browser than the original TRS-80 had hardwired into it back in the day. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, what, 16K? I mean, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah, it's crazy. So where do you see yourself 10 years from now? What kind of products do you think you'll be working on? Do you think you'll still be at TechSmith, or are you going to start your own company in that time and make $1 million developing on the iPhone? Or are you happy kind of where you're at?
I'm really happy where I'm at. I see myself definitely still developing kind of shrink-wrapped product software.
What's the best thing about developing to you?
I just like seeing cool stuff happen.
Yeah, the results from
you
do something and then you have a reaction.
Yeah, seeing kind of almost the visual feedback from it, which has been a lot of fun with working on Camtasia Studio, just with the stuff that Apple gives. Another reason I like programming Apple is just for all the multimedia stuff that they offer with core image and core video and even audio stuff. It's just really cool because back in school you write programs that are you print out this stuff, you print out some text, and then you parse it and you do some other stuff. And that's real boring. But actually seeing graphics or hearing hearing stuff.
Does it feel like you're working in the future compared to what you were learning in school?
Yeah, I feel like I'm doing real stuff now, yeah. And it's a lot of fun. So.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you coming in and talking to me, and good luck with all the Mac programming, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Don't let the Windows people bring you down here.
Yeah.
Bill Hamilton is the president of TechSmith. Bill, this is all your fault. Everybody is here, and it's your fault, Bill.
Well, it's a lot of people's faults, mostly our customers' fault.
How did TechSmith get started?
Well, actually, myself and the founding partner, another gentleman who's no longer with the company, really wanted to create a company that we could develop software in and shrink wrap software and sell it. So that was really the original reason for putting the company together. We had a problem, though, that we also needed to eat.
Yeah.
So what we were actually did a lot of in the early years was consulting, contract programming and consulting so that we could keep our families fed.
At what point did you know that the shrink wrap software, and of course now it's probably more internet sales than anything else, when did you know the shrink wrap software is really going to be how you're going to be able to pay your mortgage and send your kids to school?
Well, we, of course, always hoped it would be, but I think we went through a period where Windows was changing and Windows and how it was accepted in the business community was changing. And actually, that wasn't a good thing for us. But we started developing a software product at that time, and the first couple months after it was developed, it wasn't so clear whether we were going to be able to continue eating or not.
What was that product?
It was called Enterprise Wide, and it was actually a gateway for local area networks so that people on remote laptops could get into SQL servers on the back at the corporate headquarters.
And kind of a precursor to VPN?
Yeah, it was in a way. We were using those new fancy 9600 baud modems
that
had
fast.
Error correcting. Yeah, oh, they were stupendous.
Yeah.
And that's really what we did for a couple years. And that product ended up being sold to CompuServe. So we didn't pursue that after that point. But that was the first real product that we had.
What was the next one that really kind of took off for you?
Well, it was sort of a strange story. We had actually developed way back in our early consulting days, because we'd always been Windows consultants. We didn't really do much MS-DOS, which made us sort of an odd duck out there in the early years, because no one thought that businesses would ever use Windows, just like they didn't think they would ever use the Mac.
Nope.
So we had developed Snagit as an in-house utility to help us with the documentation of these early Windows applications, to do screen captures for the documentation. And we decided to do some more work and commercialize it, but we were really leading the market too much. There just wasn't.
The technology wasn't there, was it?
Right. The demand really wasn't out there. People were still trying to figure out what kind of word processor they wanted on Windows. And when we came and said, well, we have this screen capture utility, they were just sort of like, wait a minute, I'm not there yet. So we sort of set it aside when we went in this other direction with this local area network and a gateway. After that product was no longer ours, we were faced with how are we going to make a living in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And the two possibilities were either to go back to consulting again and put on a tie, and none of us really wanted to do that.
No, once you've got out of the consulting business, you don't want to go back.
You're right, absolutely. The other possibility that was advanced by a couple of people in the company was to take the Snagit product that we'd sort of been indifferently selling. It was a out on some bulletin boards, sort of a shareware product, and use this newfangled thing called the Internet and to see if we could really get some sales from it. At that point, we weren't getting enough to sustain the company. But we did that. The developers started making a version to work on Windows 95 because that broke a lot of the earlier Windows software. And the rest of us tried to figure out how to use this newfangled Internet to sell it. And remarkably, in a period of about 18 months, we were able to increase the sales of Snagit by about a factor of six.
Was that because of the shrink wrap box, or was that because of the Internet?
It was because of the Internet.
Yeah. So that's really changed everything for you.
Absolutely. Because that's one of the reasons you can even have a company like ours in Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. It amazed me that there's a company like this in my backyard. I had no idea. Most of the people that I interview, people like Dr. Gamilio and even the smaller developers, they're all in the Bay Area, so I don't get to see them in person. It's always through, you know, the Internet, which is great to do, and I can make the sound quality really good. But to actually come, sit down at a company's headquarters and talk to them, and it's here in Michigan, that's amazing. But with the Internet, does it really make a difference where you are at?
You know, there are always trade-offs. There are some things that would be easier if we were in the Valley. There are some things.
No shoveling snow.
I was thinking more about trying to find some of the specialized people like lawyers and IP intellectual property specialists, but that's true too. But there are advantages here. You know, we have employees here that complain about their 7-minute commutes.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of quality of life things here that work out well for people. But the thing that really is the great equalizer is the Internet. It's the way that we can get to that audience, not only in this country, but throughout the world, and that we can communicate with experts in different areas and do that in a very timely fashion. So it really doesn't make a lot of difference in many ways where you're located on the face of the earth.
You can own a lot nicer house for a lot less money here than you could if you're in the Bay Area, too.
Yeah, and you can have that short commute, and you can have a good school system for your kids. And you can have a life and go up north to Traverse City or wherever you want to in a couple hours. So there really are a lot of good reasons to be located here.
Why did you get into computers initially, Bill?
Boy, do I have a good answer for that. I don't have any great insight into it that said I ought to be in computers. What happened was that when I was in junior high, so this was around 1960, because mm-hmm. I'm an old guy, a friend of mine said, hey, you know, let's take our bikes and go over to this place I know on campus at MSU. And what they had up there was a first-generation vacuum tube computer. The input and output were both punched paper tape, and they didn't care who used it because it was just a toy that had been made by some electrical engineering professors over there. So we went up there and programmed it, and it was a lot of fun. And I wish I could tell you I saw the future out of that, but I'd be lying.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, and it sort of got me interested in some of those things. And so I continued taking math classes and other kinds of classes. There were no computer classes back then. And then Uncle Sam decided that I ought to spend a couple years with him.
Southeast Asia?
I did not go to Southeast Asia. That was the time period I was in, but in the infinite wisdom, they felt, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that I should be in the snowstorms in Bavaria, so in a nuclear missile unit.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. When I came back, I decided I wanted to be a sociology major because I wanted to figure out why people treated each other the way they do. It turns out that's not what sociology is about. But so they gave me a professor to talk to in the sociology department. And he looked at my background and found that I'd had a lot of math and other things. And he said, aha, I found the person I've been looking for, because he had a Junker PDP-8 computer down in his lab, and he didn't have anyone to program it. So he said, oh, good, you're a sociology major. Well, here's what you need to be taking: statistics, math, computer science.
And he was trying to find someone to work for him.
Yeah, absolutely. He wanted a programmer, and he got one. So 4 years, actually, about 5 years later, because I was a graduate student there too, I'd taken almost no sociology classes, but I'd taken essentially the whole undergrad curriculum in computer science and, you know, the same math classes that you would take in engineering college. Thank God.
Do you find that you had the aptitude for it at the time?
I loved it. I did. I absolutely loved programming, and I finally gave it up as a professional thing a few years ago.
You don't have to do that anymore. Now you have people that'll do it for you.
I gave it up because I didn't want to be in their way, frankly.
Yeah.
they're better at it than I am anymore.
What was the first computer you bought for your personal use? Do you remember?
I had some friends that actually made an Altar kit, if you remember those.
Absolutely.
And several other computers, including an IMSA, which was a strange computer that was made by a bunch of strange people. They were all Estes. They were in the S movement. But the first one I actually bought myself that was an IBM PC.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 64K motherboard.
Blazing fast.
Awesome. With dual floppy drives.
It was
just decked out, man.
Yeah.
You know, when you were doing compiles on it, you would do one compile and run out and get the floppy out and put the linker in and go through until you finally got your program and found out it wasn't working. So
when you see some of the new people that comes to work for TechSmith now that's right out of college, do you think they take for granted what they have in their laptop compared to what was available just 20 years ago?
I think they have no idea.
No.
I also programmed on mainframes. And when I was programming on mainframes, IBM 4300s and things like that, the rule of thumb was that memory was a buck a byte.
Ooh.
So that would mean that the laptops people are carrying around, which you couldn't have bought back then, would have cost a couple billion dollars just for the memory.
GDP of a small country.
Yep. you couldn't buy it, but if you could, that's what it would have cost. I think they have no idea the kinds of equipment we were working on and, you know, the memory limitations and the other things that were true in the early years.
If you could take one piece of equipment from right now, 2008, and show it to yourself back in your junior high days in 1960, what would you take? What would be the product that you would take? Would you go with something like an iPhone or a laptop or a video game system?
What I'd probably take would be a digital camera.
Really?
I think that would just be truly amazing for me to see that back in those years. But I would also suspect, you know, there's that saying that enough advanced technology seems like magic.
Yes.
I think if someone did walk up to me back then and say, here, look at this camera and see what it can do, and, you know, you can see the pictures right away and all of that, I would just thought it was some kind of con, probably.
Some kind of a trick or something.
Yeah.
There's no way that's doing that.
Yeah, I just don't think you could really buy into the technologies back then and believe that they're possible.
So you think the camera would have blown your mind?
Sure it would have, because I wouldn't have even understood what a computer was, you know, before that. But the cameras, I had done a lot of photography, and I think the idea that how it was going to change and revolutionize everything might have been something I could have groped, as they would have said back then.
Well, your products nowadays are good for education, but they're also good for, say, independent publishers like myself that want to produce content that can be enjoyed, or I can teach someone how to use their computers. Did you ever see back in the day, even 5-6 years ago, the way media, as in CBS, NBC, MTV, radio, all that was going to kind of merge with the computer industry, and it would kind of blossom into this brand new industry that we're in today, where an independent publisher like myself in Battle Creek, Michigan, could really compete on a level playing field in iTunes with the big boys? Did you ever see that, and did you think your products would really help facilitate that?
I don't want to make me into a visionary, but to some extent we really did see that when we launched Camtasia back in 1999. that we did look at it as a way of sort of democratizing the access to creating videos and creating content. Now, the bigger picture you're drawing, I don't think we thought much about that. We were just trying to figure out.
It's still in development, though. That's still happening.
That's still happening, yeah. And it's not even clear how it's all going to actually shake out. But one true difference that's happened with PCs and the software on it is things that used to be only the domain of professionals and carefully guarded and all the rest, whether you're talking about journalists or you're talking about photographers or lots of other areas, is now accessible to a wide range of people. And they've done really amazing things with it.
It's amazing. I've been in the industry. I've been publishing MyMac since 1995, and even going back 13 years, it's completely changed the way I work then and the way I work now, but yet it still comes down to a quality product, and I think that the quality product's always going to win out in the end. Have you seen that with TechSmith?
I think that what we've learned is that you create a product and put it out there, and that's only the beginning of a process of having a true conversation with your customers and your users over a long time period. And suggesting things, listening, talking, and evolving. And it's all in that process is what makes the real difference, is whether you are actually really interested in what your customers say.
Yeah.
Our experience with a lot of companies is not so much.
Hmm.
You know, they really aren't that interested except in the way of can we sell more product or whatever else. But there are companies out there that clearly are very, very focused on trying to have that conversation with customers. I'd like to think that TechSmith is one of those. And if there's a reason that we've been successful and are still standing after this time, it has to do with that.
Would you have thought 20 years ago that you'd still be with TechSmith, that you would still be running this company and it would be where it is today? Or is it kind of a surprise to you to kind of look back with hindsight?
Well, you know, we've gone through our tough times, too.
Sure.
So there certainly were different time periods where I wasn't quite sure whether we were going to be there next month, much less you know, 20 years down the road. And for no company is the future guaranteed. So I can't, you know, I can't with absolute certainty say what the future of TechSmith is. I certainly hoped, and it's our goal here, to create something enduring. We didn't start TechSmith, and we haven't developed it to sort of flip it and, you know, make a few dollars.
You'd have done that already if that
was. We would have done it already, right. The real goal here is to have something that's sustainable and is giving value over time. And I hope that that's what we are able to create.
I want to thank you, Bill, for coming on the show. Bill Hamilton is the president of TechSmith. Check it out at techsmith.com. And finally, to wrap up my time here at TechSmith, by the way, thank you guys for having me out here. This is really, really fun. Amy, you're here with me right now.
Yes.
What's your last name?
My last name is Hagerstrom.
Hagerstrom.
Mm-hmm.
And?
Troy Stein.
And you're a product manager with?
Camtasia.
What's Camtasia? Talk to me.
What Camtasia Studio does is it allows you to show things on your computer, so that you can train and communicate more clearly than you could by just explaining it with text or with voice.
What's a product manager do here at TechSmith with Camtasia? What's your daily routine? Is it always here in the trenches, or are you go to trade shows?
Go to trade shows, go out and meet with the customers on site. I spend a lot of time trying to listen to the customers and figure out what they need. And then translate that.
So you do the Bill Clinton, I feel your pain. I'm here to help.
Right. You do a lot of commiserating, and that's best done actually with users because you try to figure out what problems they're trying to solve. Oftentimes they'll say, I need this feature. And in reality, if you dig in a little bit, what you can understand the pain and the problem. And you can give them more than the feature, hopefully.
Or sometimes it's already there, they just weren't aware of it.
Yeah, that's oftentimes the case. In fact, about half of our tech support issues that we get are really how-to questions as opposed to this doesn't work.
Yeah. Now, when you get those kind of questions where they say, how do I do this or this isn't working, you find out it's not the customer's fault that they didn't know how to do that. It's your fault as a company,
yep,
a product manager that you didn't explain. How do you incorporate changes in the future to reflect when people have these kind of problems? Do you, like, keep a diary, if you will, an Excel an Excel spreadsheet mm-hmm. saying these are the issues that keep coming up consistently. We need to build into the system how to change that. Is that what you do a lot?
So there's really a two-pronged approach that we take. One is when we hear from tech support or from the customers that they're having an issue, then we generally will make videos on our website, and we have about 3+ hours of training on Camtasia Studio for free, and we use our product to show people how to use our product. But we do that so that we can sort of clear off of our plate the issues that have workarounds, or maybe it's just an exposure issue that we didn't actually show people or make it real obvious how to do something. So we do that. Then we have this spreadsheet, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. in which we detail out all the different feature requests for customers, and we track the popularity of those. We'll often go out to our what we call an advisory board, where it's a group of our users, and we'll say, you know, give us some feedback. Is this really a big issue? Is this less of an issue? And then we'll bake that into the product. And then when we launch the product, the next version, we generally do that again by way of videos. And there's we have a website that explains everything, and there's kind of the overview marketing video. But then we'll generally sit down with the lead developer and myself, and we will go through in much looser, more casual form even the bugs that we fixed in this release and the little tweaks that probably don't equate to a big marketing push, but at the same time, they make people's lives easier. So we'll go through and make sure that we communicate with our customers that we did listen, and we try to incorporate that.
Yeah, that you're human and that, you know, hey, we found this problem. It's because of you guys. You guys brought this to our attention. This is why we fixed it, and yeah. I think that's probably very important.
You know, for what it's worth, there's two sides to the feel the pain issue. There's the great part about meeting with customers, and they get excited about what we do, and they get excited about what they can do with our products, and it's very genuine. The hardest part about being the product manager is hearing the pain of, oh, I just wish I had this feature. I wish you could do this. And you hear that, you know, 100 times a week or more than that a week. And after a while, you're like, wow, there's just so much that I wish we could do. Thankfully, we're hiring, so we can accomplish more every year. But yet, we also are doing a good job from a marketing perspective and from a PR perspective. And so we become more popular, which means there's just that much more stuff we have to do.
Yeah. How long have you been with TechSmith?
5 years.
5 years. What did you do before? Did you come directly from college or?
No, I ran my own software company for about 3 years, using very similar.
Speaking of feeling the pain.
That's right. Right. So actually, one of the benefits of having run a small business is that I know rather keenly what it's like to try to scale a business, whether it's from a support or a training perspective or even a sales perspective. And when I saw what Camtasia Studio could do, it was really easy to jump ship because I saw the value that it represented to small companies such as the one I ran.
Are you from right here in Michigan as well?
Originally from California. I grew up out in the Bay Area, came out here for business school at the University of Michigan, mm-hmm. and my wife and I fell in love with the Midwest and the people out here, and we decided
to
stay.
You like the snow, wasn't it?
Actually, I called my father-in-law, who's from New York. I called him the first time I played hockey on a pond, and I thought that was just great.
Yeah. So you've been working for TechSmith for 5 years. Is this the main product that you work on, or is this the only product that you work on? Is there a lot of cross-pollination between the products here?
There is. The technology inside of Camtasia Studio is fairly rich. The ability to record what's going on your screen can be used in lots of different ways. So the first outgrowth of Camtasia was something called Moray, which is a usability product. So you would sit somebody down to find out, can they use your product well? Are they experiencing a good workflow? Mm-hmm. So that came out of Camtasia, I believe now about 2.5-3 years ago, based on some research that we did. Then about 18 months ago, we started listening to the educators who were trying to do lots of PowerPoint recordings. They wanted to record their screen, their presentations, and archive that for their students, and realized that we could make that a lot easier. So now we've started that product, which will be coming out later this fall. And now we're working on a Mac version of Camtasia Studio as well.
Any kind of RSS you can use RSS feeds with mm-hmm. these audio and video. Or?
Yeah, so actually that's yet another product that came out as an outgrowth out of Camtasia Studio. We found that for many of the smaller organizations, they didn't have hosting services for mm-hmm. their videos. So we created screencast.com, which allows people to easily take the video that they make with Camtasia, upload it to screencast.com, and that has an RSS feed as well as iTunes feed, so
right.
it's real easy
it
for them to...
a personalized RSS feed at screencast.com for each user?
For each user, yes.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. a service that a lot of small producers really can use, because, for instance, I pay the bills at mymac.com, and I see what my bills are for serving, and, you know, that's...
Right.
There's going to be a lot of people out there that have great ideas on how to, you know, I want to make some tutorials on how to use QuickTime, for instance.
You bet.
This would be a good service for them to use?
Absolutely.
And it's definitely going to be a lot cheaper than paying my server bills.
Right. So with Camtasia Studio, you get, I think it's 25 gigs of storage and transfer a month for $7.
That's
and
nothing.
It really isn't. It's not That's, very much at all.
Yeah. And you can tie this to your own personalized website as well.
Absolutely. You can just host the content and then embed it into your own web page.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Don't think I forgot you sitting over there.
I didn't.
You've been with TechSmith for 22 years, I hear.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, subtract, let's see, 23 years and 10 months.
Yeah, so you've been here for just a couple months.
Yeah.
Where'd you come from?
I actually came from the world of politics.
World of politics.
Yeah, I was not in technology until I started here. This is new for me.
What do you think about the technology world? Is it different than you thought it was going to be when you started, or is it harder? Is it more difficult? Is it funner?
It's a little funner. Shocking, actually. That's okay. My husband does that.
Yeah.
So. It's a little shocking. You know, in politics, there's so much fighting mm-hmm. and, you know, negative and, you know, for a public relations person, quote unquote, spinning, you know, information.
Yep.
And
he didn't really mean what he said. This is what he really meant.
Exactly. Yep. Yes. And so, you know, here it's a lot more what I envisioned when I decided to pursue public relations. It's a lot more what I love about TechSmith and you know, some of that technology companies that I've, you know, that we're working with
sure.
is that they really do care about their customers, mm-hmm. and it's about creating the best possible technology with as much customer feedback as we can incorporate. So
one of the things about tech companies that I've noticed over the years is the people that run and work at these companies, at technology companies, unlike a lot of other industries, they actually use the products that they're creating, mm-hmm. and they become impassioned with this product. A leathersmith may use the leather belt that he made. A guy working at GM may own a GM car, but that's quite different than actually getting into the trenches and creating the actual software, being a product manager, seeing the development of something, getting in front of the company like you do, Amy, and promoting it, talking to idiots like me, but yet smart people as well on the other side in other businesses and promoting the company. What's been the most rewarding for you coming to TechSmith? Is it talking to big companies, or is it simply to find the new way to communicate with potential customers?
I think there are two things that have been the most rewarding since I've only been here for 2 months. I've had the opportunity to go to one trade show so far, and for me that was just a tremendously eye-opening experience.
What was the trade show?
It was Campus Technology out in Boston, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and we were out there talking about our public beta of Camtasia Relay, which will be launching the 1.0 version later this year. But one thing that I was struck with is, you know, since I've worked with TechSmith, we have the evangelist team, and I'm over in the marketing wing, and so we hear, you know, a lot of, you know, our customers just think we're great, and our, you know, we love our customers, they love us, and, you know, there's this, you know, passionate group of power users who just really dig how we approach customer service, but going out to that trade show and having the people come up to our booth and say, I don't know how I got along without Jing.
Hmm.
And I have been using Camtasia Studio, and I have been just doing awesome things in my classroom at such and such university.
Kind of open your eyes a little bit?
Oh, Yeah, it's very. It's one thing to hear it from somebody, you know, somebody
within
who works
the company.
In the company. Right. You know, I came back that Monday, and we have a tradition here at TechSmith every Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning. In spite of the fact that we're no longer 5 employees, and now we're 200 employees, we have a Monday morning staff meeting in our main conference room, and they
with everybody,
everybody
yep.
in the company.
Wow.
Yep. So
don't tell the fire marshal.
So we, it's an opportunity for us to. See everybody. We usually do, Bill will say who had trade shows last week, and we'll give a, quick overview of how the trade shows went. And, I was on deck, a week or two ago from having been at Campus Technology. And so I did the report, and the first thing I said, and I may have offended some people here at TechSmith even, I said, well, I now believe that you're not all just drinking the Kool-Aid. So, because I saw it. I saw how crazy, wild about what we're doing here our customers are, and I love that. I mean,
I think that's kind of unique in the tech industry, too. You go to car shows, people aren't going up to the people at GM and going, I can't believe how great my Chevy truck is. It's just, you're going to get a few of those people, but in the tech industry, I think that's much more common, don't you, Troy?
I think so. We had another trade show earlier this year. Because Camtasia can be used, it's not very difficult. It can be used by lots of different people. And so we had a trade show earlier this year where it was an educational show, and they were talking about how people use technology. And a teacher from California, I believe it was, actually flew out his sixth grade kids. That what he did is he said, look, I'm not going to teach you math, not as well as you're going to teach yourselves. So, Jimmy, your job is to figure out, binomials. And your job is to figure out the square root. And, Jenny, your job is to figure out factoring. And he would teach them these little things. And then he would sit the kids down with Camtasia, and the kids would actually record how to do binomials and factoring and square roots. And they'd use his tablet, and they'd make this little drawing on the screen, and Camtasia would record them in their voice, and then they would send these videos out to their peers, their kids, right? The guy had the kids presenting at the conference. And when the conference, when the kids were done presenting, this was a keynote. So sixth graders doing keynote presentation.
Yeah.
They got a freaking standing ovation. Everybody was just cheering for them. And when they were done, these adult teachers were coming up asking for autographs from sixth graders, And so you bet our customers, kind of like these sixth graders, they get exposure because they're making cool stuff.
Did that make you want to get back to work as soon as you
totally.
To make it even better?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I got to get back to work now.
Our goal, what we talk about with Camtasia, is our goal is to make rock stars, is to make our customers really stand out. More often than not, we succeed. It's the times that we don't that also feeds our passion and says, okay, we got to do better.
I was kind of surprised when I showed up here that you guys are kind of in this industrial park, and there's a lot of buildings that have TechSmith in the front of it. And, of course, I'm driving around, and I'm talking to Dave McCollum, and he's, visually trying to guide me to where I'm supposed to be, because you guys are a lot bigger than I thought you would be. I thought, hey, it's just going to be this little small building, and that's where they'll be. You guys are a lot bigger than I thought. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Dave about this, that at least in Michigan, the economy is horrible, and you guys are actually growing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's the combination of what and what that's leading to your success? We'll start with you, Amy, because you're brand new.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of still looking at this company a little bit from the outside in. What do you think it is about TechSmith that's really helping you guys grow?
It gets back to the customer, honestly. I mean, and that's not, me putting the PR spin on things. Again, we spend 80% of our time listening, I would say, at the very least, we're listening through our evangelist team, through our feedback that we're getting through publications and reviews of our products and things that people were talking to out at trade shows. Our customer is really, really important, and I think the other thing that is, TechSmith is a great place to work. I mean, we are treated very, very well here.
I think I might have to go grab my resume or something.
Yeah, Bill and his executive team, do a fabulous job of creating a corporate culture here that, makes all of us feel like we're part of a big, important family. No one here is left behind.
Our products don't suck either.
No, that helps too, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, I want to thank both of you and everybody else that I talked to today, Dave McCollum, Tony Dunkel, Bill Chang, Troy here, Amy. Amy, we've been talking via email for a couple weeks now. And, of course, Bill Hamilton, the president of the company, the guy who he started all this. That's why you guys are here. So we definitely want to give a great big shout-out to Bill. Thank you very much, Bill. And I'm going to head back to Battle Creek, and I want to thank both of you guys for talking to me today. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.